There are certain moments and words that shaped a new era in pro wrestling.
Austin 316 says, "I just whipped your ass."
Brett screwed Brett.
Die, Rocky, die.
Suck it!
Introducing the Book of Wrestling, 25 catchphrases that explain the Attitude Era. Tune in as we relive one of the most exciting, intense, and over-the-top times in WWE, with new interviews with the voices that made the promos, calls, and catchphrases into history. Listen now.
My Eagle enthusiasts, it's Fairway Rollin' presented by FanDuel. Major season is here, and you can get in on all the long drives, big putts, and major moments with FanDuel. Check out live PGA Tour bets like longest drive, round leaders, matchups, birdie or better, and more. Plus, track every shot in the app and watch select par three holes while you place your bets. Download the app today and bet with FanDuel, the official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 years old or older and present in select states. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hello, friends, and welcome to this golf podcast unlike any other. Yes, my birdie buddies, this is a U.S. Open recap edition of Fairway Rollin' on the Ringer Podcast Network. I am your starter, Joe House. Joining me, as is always the case, especially for these major recaps, Nathan Hubbard, our PGA Tour correspondent on the ground. It's a Father's Day edition. It's a U.S. Open edition. We're going to head right into it. The peg is in the ground. I'm swinging as I'm speaking. Nate Dogg, how you feeling, buddy?
Man, how are you feeling? Because this is not who you wanted to win this thing.
Well, to be fair, it's not who I anticipated winning. It's not about what I want or don't want. He's an extraordinarily worthy champion.
Was that enough major brain for you?
This is precisely what I asked, dare I say, demanded out of Matthew Fitzpatrick this week. And he
gave it to you.
He did. He channeled all of those positive vibes only, from his experience at this venue 9 years ago. And all week we're running down narrative lane. Oh, Matthew Fitzpatrick, the only gentleman from outside of the United States to have the opportunity to win both the amateur and the open at the same venue. Now, Jack did it. He did it at Pebble Beach, but he's from the United States. Matthew Fitzpatrick has the opportunity as a non-American to do this. Can he do it? Well, Nate Dogg, couple things he revealed to us this week. Giant balls on the dude. Giant hitter. Whoa. Lengthy.
It was the length that surprised the hell out of me.
How about that? And he had the stones. He showed the major brain. The brain that was missing in the PGA Championship that resulted in him ending up fifth rather than competing and having a chance to be in the playoff, he righted those wrongs. The mental mistakes were not there. So, but I want to hear, let's run through some of the stats because they're extraordinary.
Well, from a 30,000 foot level, we have seen this coming. He has led the tour in 2022 in shots gained total. Since the start of the season, the wraparound season, he's been second in that category. So this has been one of the best golfers on tour. It has gone unnoticed because of the unfuego nature of Scottie Scheffler and probably, you know, all of the other drama that's been happening on tour. But Matthew Fitzpatrick has been striking the crap out of the ball. What is shocking to me is that if I'd told you today that Will Zalatoris was going to gain a shot and a half putting, that his approach shots gain numbers were going to be basically equal to Matthew Fitzpatrick, and that Matthew Fitzpatrick was going to lose shots putting, who would you have told me was going to win this thing?
I mean, obviously, right? Because Willie Z also has shown us the mental chops. He's so relentlessly around the hoop in these majors. I don't think he's making mental mistakes, Willie Z. I think he's catching a little rub of the green. I mean, to me, the golf tournament came down to, this is not profound, the 15th hole. They both hit the ball right. Matthew Fitzpatrick had the rub of the green, the good luck for it to go right enough and perhaps to bounce off of somebody's leg or a vehicle or something to land in a trampled sort of driveway area. And he had a wonderful lie. He was 220 yards out. Zalatoris, by contradistinction, caught a lie that was sort of, you know, not the worst lie ever, but in the rough, he really felt like he had to chop down hard. It was a tiny pull left. It ended up in the bunker.
Yeah.
And that was the golf tournament, really.
Well, it looked like the golf tournament was over after 11 because the guy who was missing the shorties today was Matthew Fitzpatrick. He misses a 5'2" putt on 10. He misses a 4'11" putt on 11, and you just go, that's it. Why is he keeping the pin in? It's stupid. You start swearing, right? But then on 13, that 48-footer, and this is where the shots gained metric can be a little bit misleading because we like guys that do what on the back nine on Sunday, House?
Go out and grab the golf tournament by the gonads, Nate Dogg.
And a 48-footer on 13, followed by that almost 19-footer on 15, is called grabbing the golf tournament by the gonads. And he did it not to be outdone. He's sitting in the bunker. You think, maybe, why did he take the 3-wood, right? Why did he take the 3-wood on 18? Azinger was weird today in calling this like the best ball striking effort ever. I get that he hit 17 of 18. I get it. But like Zalatoris had the, you know, point, like a tenth of a shot less than him in shots gained approach. Like they both were striping the ball, but it was that recovery out of the bunker that I think goes down as the clutch shot, right?
That's right.
It really was. That's, you and I sat on that hole and watched a bunch of guys come up on Friday. And what did we see from people who were in the left side? They struggled.
It wasn't even like in the bunker. Like if you were on the left side at all, even guys that were in the fairway on the left side was much harder. There was some combination of hidden yardage, maybe the way the breeze was blowing, right. The way that we watched on Friday, everybody that was up that left side had a bigger challenge. I caught a great nugget. The Golf Channel is doing an awesome job with their recap stuff. Todd Lewis chatted with Billy Foster, who I want to make sure we spend a little time on, the caddy for Matthew Fitzpatrick. And Billy Foster said, I told him he must take 3-wood. He said that Fitzpatrick wanted to hit driver and Billy talked him out of it. He said it was sort of like a conversation they'd had all week long about what they wanted to do off of 18. Fitzpatrick wanted to hit driver. Billy told him to hit 3-wood and he tugged it. And Billy put his head in his hands afterwards. But you know, in the way that champions do, he caught the tiniest bit of good luck in terms of where it landed in the bunker, what kind of shot he was afforded. Like, you know, 2 feet to the right, he couldn't hit that shot. A tiny bit, you know, further up towards the center, he could have gone into the hay in the center of the bunker. He had a great lie and a great angle, and he was able to execute a once-in-a-lifetime shot under those circumstances. But I do want to talk about Billy Foster a little bit.
Okay.
We have, once again, a major caddy, a major teammate along the ride. So look at the caddies for the champions this year. It's this guy who's been caddying for 40 years. He worked with Sebi Ballesteros. He worked with Darren Clark. He worked with Lee Westwood. He can rattle off moments in majors. He was with Bjorn, who left the shot in the bunker. He was on the bag for Thomas Bjorn in the Open Championship that Thomas Bjorn should have won. So he's got a lot of scar tissue. But
because
he also
never won a major, right?
That's right. Correct. But he also has, like, look at that resume. And look at the resume of Jim
Ted
Bones
Scott
McKay. And look
and
at the resume
Bones
of
McKay.
Ted Scott. There we go. And we're going to talk about some guys that disappointed us today.
Yes, we are.
And you know, this teammate thing matters.
It matters.
Look,
Fitzpatrick had the look today. That's the one thing that I thought Azinger was right about. Like, he didn't seem like the moment was too big from him. From the beginning, he looked locked in. You could see it in his eyes that he was going to be. Rory looked a little overwhelmed. Rom looked a little befuddled.
Poor Rom had his C-plus game. That was the one I was most disappointed by.
Yeah,
but, right,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Keep going.
It's okay. I mean, look, he's going to lament 18 on Saturday for a very long time. Because if he comes in today with you know, at 6 under, he's going to win this golf tournament. But it was disappointing. But, or 5 under, he's going to win this golf tournament. But Fitzpatrick did have the look. And something about staying in the same rooms, in the same house where he stayed when he won the USAM. I mean, look, maybe it's horseback ride. Like, the superstition in golf is real. And it worked. It gave him that level of calm and comfort. And you saw his whole family on the green afterwards. They really handled this mentally in the best possible way. And to your point, part of that was the relationship with the caddy.
I also was impressed in some of the interviews afterwards in the discussion about where did this length come from? You know, how did that come together? Again,
he talks about it. An underdeveloped human sometimes, depending on the angle.
He is.
He's tiny. We're still fixing his teeth.
We got to ask Justin Ray, is he the first player to ever win a major wearing braces? I feel like we need to know the answer to this. That feels like a stat that we should get an answer to. But in his reference to how the speed came together, he talked about a nutritionist. He talked about working with, was it a kinesiologist? Somebody, swing mechanic, you know, a swing doctor kind of person. Obviously, he mentioned by name his physio. And, you know, he talked about developing a regimented plan, an approach to building the speed, and he's seen the results. And he mentioned in one of the interviews how he was injured at some point last season, and he wasn't able to do all the speed training. And immediately he lost some accuracy with the driver because he was growing accustomed to swinging, to releasing, whatever the technique is that's working for him. But it was, again, like a full team, fully conceived strategy, approach. It feels sustainable. And I don't want to, like, you know, this isn't for the purposes of tearing down Bryson, but think about that stark contrast. Matthew Fitzpatrick was the one who criticized the Bryson approach at Wingfoot. He basically said, you know, this isn't the way to do this. He found a strategy in that same, you know, vein where I need to add length to my game to compete.
Well, he got length, but he did not have to sacrifice accuracy.
Right.
Right. I mean, he was stellar off the tee. I mean, he was second in shots gained off the tee for this tournament. And that wasn't just because he was bombing and gouging. I mean, I think about the eighth hole. His drive on the eighth hole today was 288. It was the three wood uphill from 266.
Holy cow.
Precision to amazing. 25 feet. And amazing. He has a stress-free birdie, right? That's different than the bomb and gouge stuff that we saw at Winged Foot. And more broadly, this was a terrific test of golf. What a great leaderboard all week long. I thought it was fair. I thought when you'd see somebody putt it and it would roll off the green, it was because they hit a putt that was too hard. Or, on eight, as those guys tried to come up the hill and that super tight lie, they wouldn't get it all the way up and it'd come back down the hill. Yeah, it's a fucking US Open. That's how this shit works. But it didn't feel like the last couple of years where you had just players basically losing faith in the tournament and in the people doing the setups ability to create something that really sussed out the best golfers. So I take the hat off to those folks because all of the people, I mean, we talked about almost everybody who was on that leaderboard coming in other than Joel Damon and a few others, but the best players in the world playing their best were all competing. And I thought it was a great, great tournament as a result.
So that's an awesome point. And I want to build on that, because if you look at the top 10, top 12, top 15, you have such a wide variety of players, different styles, different lengths, different strengths. And, that for sure, we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Four in the top six were major winners, right? So, it's Scottie's got the Masters, Hideki's got the Masters, Morikawa has the Open Championship and the PGA Championship. Rory has four majors. There's your top five.
Right.
Four guys right there. Gary Woodland tied for 10th with the U.S. Open. John Rahm finished tied for 12th, obviously, his U.S. Open. Adam Scott, Masters champion, tied for 14th. So, all of that.
They all did it differently. Fitzpatrick wins being second off the tee, 10th in approach, first around the greens, which I think is actually what was amazing. It wasn't so much his ball striking as the way that he was out of the bunkers and with the wedge. He was 42nd in putting, right? Scheffler was 51st around the greens. He was terrible around the greens, but he was second in approach.
It lost him the golf tournament.
Yes, unequivocally.
On the back nine on both Saturday and Sunday, his around the green. Now, he also had some rub of the green bad luck.
Yeah, But who else's wedges and short game lost him? Rory was 63rd around the green. He was first in putting, ninth off the tee, 19th. He's going to win this golf tournament, but for his short game, before he got to the green.
We were looking for magic hands. We thought magic hands was going to be an attribute that would be necessary. We just, it wasn't the guys that we think of with the magic hands that had them. That's all.
It wasn't. But what a classy leaderboard. Hideki sort of backdoors into fourth, but still, so does Colin, to be honest. But they both shoot great rounds.
What's amazing is Colin, he's had the craziest week of anybody. 69, 66, 77, 66. Like, holy shit. Reminder. No matter where Colin Morikawa is, unless if he has two arms and 2 feet and his odds to win are above 20, you got to get on it. I said it on our show and I set it up with Bill. There was nothing in his form to suggest that, he was going to have a great week. And I haven't gone back to my ticket yet to see how I did, but I know I bet I put something on him to win. I'm hoping I put something on him to top 10 as well.
I mean, he's first in approach today, but yesterday he was 56th. Thursday he was 89th. So, there wasn't a whole lot to see, right? Saturday or Friday he was ninth. So he just was down, up. And it was still good enough to sort of ho-hum into a T5. Not, by the way, unlike what he did at the Masters. He's just going to be there.
He's just going to be there because he's got talk about major brain. He's got the mental fortitude and he's not, he ran into a funk that he couldn't get himself out of on Saturday, but he woke up today like, I'm just going to try my best and see, if I can't go and weasel my way into competing for this championship. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. passion, drive, and patience, the formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you will always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
House. I mean, I'm stunned at John Rahm. I'm just stunned. This was a tournament that I thought today he was going to shoot 4 under and walk.
You
I
and
really
me both.
Did.
I really was prepared for it. I thought he was playing the best yesterday. And I thought he had a chance to go in the house yesterday to the point that you made a couple minutes ago. The double bogey on 18, unfortunately. It really did, because he would have gone in to the house if he even just bogeyed that. That would have been even par rather than over par round on Saturday. And he would have been in there at 4 under, which would have been with just bogey. But
he's lucky this isn't a stupid fucking piece of shit putting contest, because if it was, I mean, he was not good with the putter once again when it mattered.
He just didn't have any game at all today. Something, you know, he showed up with like C+ ball striking.
62nd today. He was basically dead last in putting. He just couldn't get it done.
He just couldn't. He didn't have it. And I don't know. I saw enough out of him yesterday to live bet him at I got him at 5-1 odds. I was just like, wow, he's striping it and he's getting that swagger going. And I thought it might just go on away, but then, you know, Scottie Scheffler.
Well, God,
holy cow! Quietly, it was right there.
It was his. This was his tournament.
Simmons were texting. I was like, I feel like there might be a 3-way playoff coming here.
There was something scary to him about being at 6 under. As soon as he would get there, both days, he just would retreat. But he hung around there. I'm actually really surprised that he didn't put it to the floor, because listen, he reopened the door this just as Fitzpatrick was bogeying 10 and 11. The other guy who was doing it was Scottie Scheffler. And Scheffler shot 1 over on the back, kind of uncharacteristic for him. And again, a little bit shakier than we would have liked to see down the stretch after a charge. You just looked at, I mean, he's 4 under through 6, and he's still got 2 par 5s in front of him. And you and I are texting like, there's a chance this thing's over by 9.
That's right. I mean, one of the guys from the Golf Channel made the observation that, you know, the first 6 holes really could determine the championship because of how hard they are and the variance that they kind of represent. And he went out and birdied one and two. And I was like, especially birdieing two, it's like game on. Now four, it turned out there was a pin position there clearly that guys felt comfortable with because there was tons of birdies on four. But it, five didn't turn out to be the kind of birdie opportunity that we saw all week. I mean, Fitzpatrick was the only guy to hit the ball onto the green out of the top contenders. And, you know, you weren't seeing guys go out and grab birdie there. But Scheffler, like, man, through he was 4 under through the first six, right?
Yes, 4 under through six. And then had trouble on eight. Again, the ball came back. And then, you know, he sort of ho-hummed in for par. But then it was 10 and 11 where stuff started to go wayward for him. And, you know, he recovered with that birdie. I thought he might get it on 18. I really thought that
he
might drop.
I was prepared for it. I was psychologically prepared for it. It turns out, I think, honestly, and I haven't had a chance to see his press conference yet, I wonder if 11 turned out to be like his bugaboo. That short part, he flew that green by so much yesterday, and they were like, it was a shock to the system. Like they couldn't believe how far over the green that went. And he was cruising at that point yesterday. And I honestly think as he came into it today, again, he's like trying to slow down, process. And he did. He made par on it today, right?
Made bogey on 11.
Oh, he made bogey. That's
right.
Yeah,
he missed a five-footer.
That's right. No reason to. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so after the bogey on 10, it's almost like he pressed a little bit and just, and that putt got him. And that opened the door because, again, Matt Fitzpatrick was about to do the exact same thing behind him. And he just gave him more cushion than he could afford to do in that moment.
Yeah. Well, and this is what we asked for. You mentioned it a little while ago. Look at this effing board. We're going to just keep talking about it and reveling in it. I do think I want to give a tiny bit of shout out to the USGA. I made the joke that this was a great PGA championship.
What did you mean by that?
Just that, you know, with the number of guys under par and, you know, today was a day full of birdie opportunities. And, you know, that's not what our mind's eye has come to anticipate out of a U.S. Open. Some of that for sure. I mean, just to be clear, that was a joke. I was, you know, but
Of course,
you can't control the weather, and the golf course ended up playing, I think, a tiny bit softer because they got like 0.3 inches of rain. And, you know, I thought they managed it absolutely spectacularly, but it just did create enough comfort for the guys. We didn't see much defensive golf, I would say.
I mean, look, it played two shots over par, only slightly more difficult than the easiest day, which was the second day. So, but you know, the Saturday was 3.5 shots over par. So it was a stroke and a half easier today. I don't mind that coming into this
That's
round
right.
though, with
That's
a bunched
right.
up leaderboard, you want to see guys have to go get it. And you know, Fitzpatrick made the putts.
And the golf course let the guys go get it. And I think that's what we want. We want the guys to be determining the outcome, not the course.
Well, and once again, you got Will at the end staring down a 14-footer that can put him into a playoff. And God love this kid. I mean, he's the new Louis Oosthuizen, right? Second in all the majors. But what we know about him and what I believe is he's going to get one of these. Because you remember him, that interview that he did so graciously after the playoff at the PGA, he said with no arrogance, just confidence and certainty. He said, I know I'm going to win one of these. Before I didn't, but now I know I can do it. That's what he learned there. And this week, you know, after that second round, he said, you know, it's not just that I think I can win. I feel it. I feel it in my body that I can win. So I think he's disappointed, but man, he's going to win a major.
Oh my God. You can see he has, you use the certainty, the confidence. He has an athletic arrogance. He has that swagger.
That's a great way to say it.
He's absolutely prepared. There's no doubt. Everybody that I played this morning, happy Father's Day to all the pops out there. And I got together with a couple few dads. Got a little.
I can't believe he did it.
Who?
You.
What do you mean?
I'm proud of you. I'm proud.
Why wouldn't I? Why? You think there's something in my circumstances that would have suggested I shouldn't do that?
No, nothing.
That's a little inside joke between me and the Nate dog. But
House look, is the best.
Look, everybody I chatted with, everybody's like, I think it's going to be Willie Z. It's Z time. And, you know, at that point when we were going off first thing this morning, that was before, you know, John Rahm was still sitting right there. Scottie Scheffler was still sitting right there. The people that I play with and spoke with were all on the Z-Dog.
But I think the Z-Dog started poorly. The Z-Dog started poorly. I love the way that he battled back. But bogey on 2 and 3, and all of a sudden you go, oh, God. But then 6, 7, 9, he starts reining him in, and you go, here we go. It's absolutely on. He looked like he had the most confidence. And when Fitzpatrick and Scheffler make the birdies or the bogeys on 10 and 11, he's sitting there 2-shot lead.
That's it. That's exactly right.
So I don't, what does he take from here? 2-shot lead with 6 to play or 7 to play. What does he take? I mean, does he go home and go, I lost this one? Or does he go, I just got caught in the struggle and, you know, next time I'll be there. The bogeys on 12 and 15 were not good.
We'll watch. Afterwards, the bogey on 15 really was just a result of it's a blind tee shot. It didn't go that far right. What's insane is like the visual from the tee with those guys, both Fitzpatrick and Willie Z hit balls from the viewpoint behind where you can't see the fairway below. It looked like they might just catch a little bit of the first edge. They were both pretty far effing right. And it's a blind shot, and it's an uncomfortable shot. And
we watched a lot of those, of those drives off 15 this week.
That's in person. We posted up there a little bit.
I just didn't like he makes the great birdie on 11, and then he steps up on the 12th tee and flares it right. And there, look, every player is entitled to the nerves. I just thought that was a moment where he could have won this tournament by 4, for crying out loud.
Maybe so, and I don't think though. That he goes home and says, like, he's like, I don't think he's crying. And no. I gave away the tournament. I don't think that's the mindset.
But he had
a couple
good
feel looks. That way.
He had good looks. I mean, he's on the 12th tee box, 2-shot lead. He had a 14-foot look on 18 to win this or to get in the playoff. You know,
he had it on 17. It was an 11-foot, you know, whatever, 9-inch putt. It was an awesome putt.
He did. He did.
It was two rotations.
Yeah, he did. And I think, look, we can, there was that time where they were showing, breaking down the angles of his short putts and just how brutal it is as he pulls the club head back and way offline. And then they showed him hit it off the toe. I mean, it was a fairly cruel, although interesting and relevant, you know, visual breakdown of the short putts. It was even worse as the announcers were like, oof, every time that he would do it, right? They were sort of holding on the edge. But then I wasn't worried he was going to miss the shorties on the back nine at all. It just really, he put himself in a couple positions where he couldn't be. And then he missed putts on 17 and 18 that, you know, he gave good rolls. So I think you're right. He probably goes home and pats himself on the back and feels exactly the way that he told us he was feeling, which is I'm going to get one.
Yeah. So I want you to give us, we're 12 months away from the U.S. Open at LACC, Los Angeles Country Club, the North Course, right?
Yes, it is. It's the North.
And the reason that I'm asking for that is because we've had a pretty decent sort of variety of courses going back to Wingfoot. I mean, really... You know, Pebble was 19, Wingfoot was 20, Torrey was 21, and the Country Club was 22. We're off to LACC. The thing that we experienced live on the grounds was it's a
shitty
beautiful
view.
It's like an incredible club with incredible golf holes, and you can see the shape and the architecture is immaculate. And but like the design concepts are like mind blowing. You like stand it behind a tee box, look at the shape, look at the blind shot, look at the landing area, look at the shape of the green, look where the bunkers are. It's just incredible if you're a golf nerd in that way.
But you can't see a putt unless you're in the grandstand.
That's right. It's impossible. And, you know, they couldn't have 50,000 people out there.
No.
Because there wasn't infrastructure for it.
Every hole crosses player. You had to wait for players.
There was a lot of rope waiting.
A lot of hurry up and stop.
So LACC, how do you think that's going to play?
Well, we're not going to have the fescue to begin with. The viewing from a spectator standpoint is going to be better because there's just more vistas and there's some bowls and you're not going to be boxed out of seeing greens. I think they're going to use, and look, it's way too soon, but with the difference, it's going to feel a little bit like this championship, to be honest, except that there's a lot more undulation and just sort of dynamic hilliness of the fairways. So there are parts of the fairways are narrow to begin with, but there are parts of the fairways where if you hit the right half, it's going to roll all the way off and in and out, you know? There will be a lot of similar elevated green complexes with shaven areas such that if you miss, there's going to be a lot of roll off. It'll be less of the 4-inch, 5-inch rough where the ball disappears and more sort of precision required. Otherwise, your ball could roll 20 yards off to the left.
And it feels pretty likely that it will be firm and fast. They will not have any issue with some weather coming in where the high is going to be 58 degrees and there's some moisture in the air.
Los Angeles. No.
Right. So it's going to be a firm and fast test, which I'm here for. I mean,
I am too. I just think the lesson, you tell me, but the lesson from this year is when you don't overdo it and you play on a difficult course, the best guys rise to the top. And looking at this leaderboard, that's exactly what happened.
So kudos to the USGA. Kudos to everybody involved with the strategy, the decision making. They were watering the greens a little bit during the play Thursday and Friday, and there was like some murmur of complaint around that. Maybe some guys got a benefit out of it. I don't know. But the course was the story in terms of the challenge, but not the story in terms of determining having an outsized impact on the winner. And that's what we're hoping for out of LACC. Nate Dogg, we are less than 1 month away from the Open Championship, the 150th competition of the Open Championship, the British Open, at the Old Course at St. Andrews. And speaking of a course that we know will permit the best players to reveal themselves, I mean, this one is on, Daddy.
Yeah. We got all the best players in the world playing their best. It's just going to be terrific.
Well, I wish we were only going to be talking about outstanding golf over the next month, but it feels like there might be some other topics of conversation, including developments that we are hearing may transpire this week. But let's
get ready for it. We got guys.
Yay. A lot of guys, and you know, the
guys
the fate,
we've been talking about for months.
The fate of the European Tour and the fate of the OWGR and what's going to happen in this partnership between the PGA Tour and the European Tour. The Scottish Open is a week or so away, and it is supposed to be an event co-sanctioned by the PGA Tour and the European Tour. Well, the European folks have already given permission to the guys that are playing in the Saudi events to play on the Euro events, which is a different outcome than what the PGA Tour has done. So there will be interesting things to talk about. But tonight,
appreciate this
tonight,
because the rest of golf is going to be shitty for a while.
Good luck,
shitty.
Good luck to Matthew Fitzpatrick. I hope he has a giant steak and doesn't have any problem
getting any caught in his braces.
Any of that meat caught in his braces. That's it. Nate Dogg, we've done it. Birdie buddies, my par saving pals, my eagle enthusiasts, thanks for coming along for the ride with us this week. Had a great time up in Boston. We got to see Bill Simmons. We got to be out on the golf course together for a little bit. Kudos to the USGA. Kudos to all of you. Kudos to our pals, Brendan Porath and Justin Ray, for coming on the shows this week. A lot of good names were tossed about. We asked for Matthew Fitzpatrick to show it to us, and he did. Our thanks to producer Isaiah. Our thanks to producer Carlos. And of course, our thanks to FanDuel and the FanDuel Sportsbook. We'll be back in a week unless there's some reason to be back sooner with an emergency pod. But until then, please, it's the early summer. All the dads out there, hope you enjoyed Father's Day. In the meantime, let's hit them straight up there.